From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Robert Siegel, in for Meghna Chakrabarty this week, and this is On Point. At its peak, the Boy Scouts of America served more than 6 million children. They earned badges for skills like camping, first aid, citizenship in the world. Well, 50 years later, kids are still sewing on those badges, but enrollment is down by more than half. Early Tuesday morning, the Boy Scouts filed for bankruptcy. The national organization is facing a wave of sexual abuse claims. In a statement, they said Chapter 11 is the best way for them to, and this is a quote, equitably compensate victims who were harmed during their time in scouting. The organization also says that filing for bankruptcy will allow it to continue carrying out its mission for years to come, which raises the questions, will there always be a place for Boy Scouts of America? And is the bankruptcy filing fair to scouts who were abused? This hour On Point, the future of the Boy Scouts. In a moment, we'll be joined from Washington, D.C. by Kara Kelly, reporter for USA Today's investigations team, who's been following the Boy Scouts and allegations of sexual abuse for some time. Kara will be with us in a moment. First joining us, though, is Marcy Hamilton, the founder, CEO, and academic director of Child USA. That's a nonprofit think tank at the University of Pennsylvania. It's dedicated to preventing child abuse and neglect. She's the author of several books, including Justice Denied, What America Must Do to Protect Its Children. She's a lawyer, and she represented victims of child abuse in the Catholic Archdiocese of Milwaukee. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
How big is this bankruptcy filing compared to what's happened in other cases of alleged child sex abuse?
This is the largest filing in history, and partly because it covers the entire nation. The preceding bankruptcies on sex abuse were in dioceses, and so they were limited geographically.
Now, is it clear that Boy Scouts of America includes all of the state organizations of Boy Scouts that are part of Boy Scouts of America?
So that's going to be part of the litigation through the bankruptcy. They're currently naming their national holdings, but this is an organization that has holdings in every state, and they have both national campgrounds and local campgrounds. And as you can imagine, those are very valuable.
Yes, I've seen estimates in the billions of the value of the property, the land that the Boy Scouts own.
There's a real parallel with the bishops, because the bishops also have a great deal of property ownership and also were the first to choose bankruptcy to make this work for them.
Given that I gather there is a multitude of claims against the Boy Scouts, and we'll be hearing from Kara Kelly just how big that multitude is in a few minutes, but what's wrong with saying, let's take this to bankruptcy court so we can organize how people receive payouts rather than have a zillion different lawsuits?
The problem is that the individual lawsuits give each individual victim the chance to get discovery, to get the truth about what happened in their case. And the public learns more through those cases. What happens in the bankruptcies, in contrast, is that the cases become compressed. We don't really hear a lot about any one individual case. You certainly aren't having trials, and you're having limited discovery. So it's really up to the bankruptcy judge whether or not this is going to be a vehicle to educate the public and aid the victims, or it's just going to be an aid to the Boy Scouts themselves.
It's up to one bankruptcy judge in which jurisdiction?
In Wilmington, Delaware.
And that judge will be determining what's on the table in the way of assets that might have to be sold to satisfy claims?
Well, that judge will decide if they need to hire, for example, a forensic accountant who will look beneath the surface in figuring out what they actually own, which has been done in some of the diocesan cases. The other thing that judge will do is decide how much of a voice the victims get in the process or how silenced they will be through the process. So this is a judge that's going to determine justice and not just the economics of this particular institution.
Does this process mean that someone who claims he was abused as a Boy Scout many years ago is not part of any settlement if he doesn't come forward soon or if he hasn't come forward already?
Well, this is the biggest problem with bankruptcy, in my view, is that under Chapter 11, the bankrupt sets a bar date, and that's the time for which victims can come forward for the first round of settlements or the major settlements. And then there might be some set aside for what's called a future claims representative. The problem is that, as I understand it, the Boy Scouts are setting a very short proposed deadline of even just 80 days for all the victims to come forward. And these are individuals who have PTSD. They have depression. Many of them have not yet come forward. And so this is, you know, these organizations love the bar date because it flushes out all the victims. It doesn't mean, number one, they'll pay all the ones who come forward. And it also doesn't mean that they'll necessarily pay equally between the first round and the second round. So there's a lot to be worked out.
That's Marcy Hamilton of Child USA. And joining us now from Washington, D.C. is Kara Kelly, investigative reporter at USA Today. Hi, Kara.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. The question has been raised, how many complainants are there? How many people who say they were victims of abuse in the Scouts might there be? Do we know the answer?
We don't. We absolutely do not. In the bankruptcy filings, in these many pages of documents that we saw come overnight, Monday into Tuesday, the Boy Scouts did estimate that they may have as many as 1,400 additional claimants. And those are people who may file suit against them or have a legal claim. So that does not cover all victims.
Additional to how many is that?
Additional to a current 275 mm-hmm. cases.
Mm-hmm. So far more than have already come forward is what you're saying.
Correct. And we know from our reporting that some of the law firms that have represented many of the victims have the Abused in Scouting group has 2,000 almost clients at this point. So there may be many, many more out there.
One extraordinary thing about this case, the case of alleged sexual abuse in the Boy Scouts, is that there was an article in the New York Times in 1935 in which a Scout executive wrote about a red flag system for weeding out people who'd been removed from the organization. Quote, I'm quoting from USA Today's quoting of this New York Times report from 1935, for various causes, including moral perversion. And that system became known as the Boy Scouts of America perversion file. A long time ago, there must be a lot of old cases.
Yes, they have known about this for many, many decades, arguably back close to their founding. So there are cases through, we've seen, you know, the 60s, 70s, that is a bulk of the cases. But we've also seen cases that are much more recent. There was a case filed in California in December on behalf of a 17-year-old victim who was abused when he was 16 in 2018.
I'd like to read you what a listener has written on Facebook. This is Deborah Janning. I don't know if she says Matovic or Matovic. As a Boy Scout leader, she writes, I would like to remind everyone that we have two deep leadership, meaning no adult is allowed in a room or to communicate with a child, with any child, unless another leader or the parent is included. Also, all leaders are required to take youth protection training. Our troop has even extended this to mandatory training for all parents so that everyone is aware of the rules and can be aware of signs of off behavior. Marcy Hamilton, let me ask you, is what the Boy Scouts are doing now in light of their past, is it solid, or do they have a good program to try to avoid any sexual abuse of children?
So these are good steps toward a better universe. But the problem for the Boy Scouts is they have a model that invites people who want to sexually abuse children to get involved. The camping, the parents not coming on the trips, the events in which you have adults, even if it's two adults, because there are instances where we have both of the adults involved abusing the children. So they've made steps forward. Just as other organizations in the United States have, they don't have the gold standard.
On the other hand, it's hard for me to imagine scouting in which there would be as many adults as there are children. I mean, it just doesn't seem logical that you could have a troop where there are 20 kids and 20 parents all that, or a combination of adults and others.
Well, that's the problem. And, I mean, you could have an organization in which the parents, it's a parent-child organization. But if they are going to persist in the model, it's made to be a haven for pedophiles. And that's the problem. And that's actually the problem with a lot of our youth-serving organizations, and they have to radically change. It's not enough to say the too deep rule. There's going to have to be a lot more restructuring so children are simply not alone, and they're just not there yet.
Kara Kelly, critics would say that, or have said, that Boy Scouts of America is trying to hide behind bankruptcy to avoid lawsuits and more discovery of what their files say. On the other hand, Boy Scouts of America say, "Hey, we've changed completely. We are we have the gold standard in preventing abuse." Have they been earnest in this process in trying to correct for the past?
I think we're still seeing that play out. I have been reporting since the files landed yesterday on a news story looking at some of the things on confidentiality that they have set up, and they have gotten into that in several of the filings. It looks like they are prepared for some of these documents, such as the perversion files, to come up and are somewhat preemptively saying that these are classified and confidential documents. So it seems like they are still trying to hide some of those, or at least keep them out of the public view.
We are discussing the Boy Scouts bankruptcy filing. I'm Robert Siegel, in for Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Robert Siegel, and we're talking about the Boy Scouts of America and why they filed for bankruptcy earlier this week. I'm here with Kara Kelly, an investigative reporter from USA Today who's been following the Boy Scouts and allegations of child sexual abuse. And we're also joined for another few minutes by Marcy Hamilton, founder and CEO of Child USA. You can join this conversation. What was your experience with the Boy Scouts? What changes do you want to see from the organization? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Marcy Hamilton, some of the files, the so-called perversion files from Boy Scouts of America, go back decades. Is there a statute of limitations on what we're talking about, and does bankruptcy affect that?
So this is going to throw a monkey wrench into their plans to do a national bankruptcy, because the statute of limitations is state by state. We had a banner year last year. We opened up a lot of states, but not even half of them have opportunities for these victims. So for many of the victims who are going to be told they have to meet this bar date soon, their claims will be out of statute. They will be stale, and therefore the Boy Scouts could argue they don't pay them. That is precisely what the Milwaukee Archdiocese did with its victims. It got everybody to come in through the bankruptcy, and then it didn't pay the ones that were out of statute. So that is, I think, the most complicated legal question and really strategy question. If they want these cases to go away, they need to say they will not take into account whether the statute is good or expired.
The statute of limitations is a legal question of how long one can take to bring a claim. In terms of your experience with such claims of child sexual abuse, whether in the church or elsewhere, how long typically does it take adults to come forward and say, this happened to me, I was 14 years old, but I remember it all too well?
So the average age, according to the best science, is age 52. And so it is not early. There are many barriers to the victims coming forward. You'd be shocked by how many of the victims will say, I had to wait until my parents passed away. I didn't want to break their hearts. So they come forward late, and we're going to see many cases that involve that age group. But there are also cases of the younger ages, and so it's going to be a real span. And this question of the statute of limitations, you know, Penn State did not impose a statute of limitations requirement on the victims it compensated. We'll see what the Boy Scouts do.
Marcy Hamilton, lawyer and CEO of Child USA at the University of Pennsylvania, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Cara Kelly, does what we just heard about how old complainants might be, does that square with what you're seeing in documents or what you've seen in the first group of people who've been identified?
Yes, absolutely. And it rang really true. I've heard from so many victims that they, you know, they don't want their names to be used. They don't want to come out fully in public because they are so scared at how this is going to affect their family. That shame, that deep impact is very real and something that these survivors have to grapple with.
Let's hear from some listeners, starting with Jerry in West Palm Beach, Florida. Hi.
Hi. I just want to express how sad I am with what's going on with the Boy Scouts of America. My son was associated with a troop in Hollis, New Hampshire, and he had an absolutely phenomenal experience as a scout. He became an Eagle Scout. But saying that, I also understand that the national organization has been absolutely negligent with how they have treated these victims and how they have condoned these predators to prey on these innocent children.
You feel that they were obliged, you think, to report these people to the police when they first learned of such things?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Jerry, thank you for calling. We're going to hear now from Ryan in Baltimore, Maryland. What is your take on this, Ryan?
Hi. Yeah, I understand the severity of the situation, and I hope that the Boy Scouts of America can bring to light and rectify the situation. I'm coming at it from an angle of I've been in scouting my entire life as a youth and as a leader for the last 5 years. So classifying it as a overall arching issue sometimes brings negative light and situations of my local organizations, which has never presented any sort of problems in the Baltimore area council. Just like to hear some comments on how individual instances and our overarching impact on local Boy Scouts of America PACs.
Thank you for that. Cara Kelly, even if we're talking about a large number, 2,000 cases, for example, that doesn't mean that that's typical of a scouting experience. There have been millions of kids in scouting all these years.
Yes, and that's something that Boy Scouts is very quick to point out. They have an entire study that they commissioned last year in these bankruptcy filings, and that was one of the key takeaways that they have definitely been touting. It's the percentage is low at the, you know, at face value, but if you look at what that actual number is, even if it's 1%, 2%, 5%, that's still a fair amount of children.
Nice.
But I understand, too, in some of our reporting, there is a lot of goodwill with the local troops and local councils. So it is probably going to be very difficult for those who are involved at their local level to be seeing all this play out across the national organization.
Yeah, more survivors of sexual abuse in the Boy Scouts are coming forward, and they have differing takes on what they think the future of the organization should be. Rick, who is an abuse survivor and one of the John Doe plaintiffs identified in the complaint against the Boy Scouts, told KCRA-TV in Sacramento, California last month that he doesn't think the abuse scandal should be the end of the organization.
I do not want to drive the Boy Scouts into bankruptcy. I don't want to see that organization destroyed. I learned a lot of wonderful life lessons there, but I want to see things change because it's unacceptable for it to continue to happen.
James Kretschmer alleges that he was molested by a scout leader during a camping trip in the 1970s. He told NBC News last July that the Boy Scouts of America cannot be repaired.
The organization should burn to the ground, and out of the ashes, maybe an organization will come out that will protect our children.
James Kretschmer, calling for a new organization in place of the Boy Scouts. Kara Kelly, you know, it's interesting. What we heard from Rick earlier was he didn't want to drive the Boy Scouts into bankruptcy. I don't want to see that organization destroyed. The Boy Scouts claim that by going into bankruptcy, they avoid destruction. They remain in operation.
I think that is one of the biggest questions facing this entire case, is should the Boy Scouts be allowed to survive, continue, and thrive after this when they may not be compensating or fully providing the survivors of child sexual abuse with what they could potentially get from civil courts outside of a bankruptcy proceeding?
Well, we're going to yes, go ahead.
Sorry, you'll see differing opinions on that. You can, you know, arguments on both sides.
You've encountered that in your reporting, that they're by no means uniform in what they think should happen to the Boy Scouts.
Oh, absolutely. And from survivor to survivor, too. I mean, one of the most heartbreaking things in this reporting is how many individuals have such fond, incredible memories right alongside these horrific ones. They had such fun on these camping trips and on all of these adventures, things that they would never been able to do without the Boy Scouts of America, and yet at the same time suffered this horrific abuse.
We're going to bring in another voice into the conversation. Alvin Townley joins us now from Atlanta, Georgia. He became an Eagle Scout in 1993. He's the author of two books on the Scouts, Legacy of Honor, The Values and Influence of America's Eagle Scouts, and Spirit of Adventure, Eagle Scouts and the Making of America's Future. Alvin, welcome to On Point.
Robert, it's nice to be with you.
Let me ask you a question very plainly here. Yes, scouting is a wonderful experience, certainly for many, a great many scouts. But the Boy Scouts of America owe lots of people lots for what happened to them when they were scouts and for what they neglected to do when those people were abused as children. Why shouldn't the Boy Scouts of America make themselves whole financially and, if need be, sell off land that they own and pay out, if it's necessary, billions?
Well, first, Robert, let me say that it absolutely right, and the heart of every other scouter I know to know that young people were abused in this program. And beyond that, it infuriates me, and I hope it infuriates everybody, that predators use this wonderful program that, you know, only aspires to do good, to do harm to young people. And, you know, we're a movement of, you know, 4 million people here in the United States and more than 30 million people around the world, you know, really goes out to these victims who we believe, and, you know, we certainly want them to find peace. And I don't know what the process for that will be. I hope that all parties can get there. I think what I'm concerned about is what one of your respondents mentioned, you know, is the future of this organization, because mm-hmm. it does provide great value for this country, and it has done so for, you know, 110 years. I think the question is how this movement perseveres and gets through this situation. You know, scouting, a lot of people misunderstand scouting and think of it as an organization. They think of the organization as the Boy Scouts of America Incorporated. In fact, scouting is a program. Scouting is a program that's delivered at the local level in 100,000-plus troops and packs and crews around the country. And that's really what scouting is to people. So I hope that when people, you know, take a pause now to think about the future of scouting, they don't look to the news headlines. Instead, you know, I want them to think about what's happening at their local level.
But the legal issue for the Boy Scouts here seems to be that from the local level, ever since the 1920s and reported in the 1930s, as I've read, the National Association has been gathering information from local organizations and sadly not acting on it. So there is a link. There is a link between the corporate structure and the local phenomenon, the program that you're describing.
Well, and since they're also local organizations, I think the local troops are what I'm really talking about. Mm-hmm. Information on this, and their intent, you know, decades ago was to have a list of people that, you know, before there was the internet, that could not go from one place to another and be involved in scouting. Should they have handled it differently? Yes, in many cases. I think, you know, on the positive side, the organization has done its best. They haven't been perfect, and no other organization is. A lot of organizations have experienced this issue. But they've done a great job, I think, in the past several decades in trying to put in measures that will protect youth as best they can. And, you know, if you look at the complaints and the plaintiffs, you know, around 90% are cases from over 30 years ago. And in any case, this would be more recent is one too many. But I think the Scouts have done, they've made a good effort in trying to be better.
Despite some dropout there, we're hearing about Boy Scouts of America and the groups filing for bankruptcy. Alvin Townley, you said, yes, they should have done things differently, and yes, they've done lots to prevent a recurrence of these problems. But the third dimension is, do they owe compensation for what they got wrong for people who didn't benefit from the kind of system the Boy Scouts now have?
Well, I believe they do. I think they've taken steps to provide that compensation. I know there have been and will be monetary settlements. There's also, I know the Scouts have made available funding for anyone who has been affected. And I think, again, everybody believes these cases. Everybody wants to these victims however we can. So I think everyone's in agreement on that. Some of the other points raised earlier, I hope, where this important movement is going to go in the future.
Yeah. Alvin, we're having a lot of dropout on the line. So I'm going to turn now to another participant, Dr. Randy Reiser, who is also joining us from Atlanta, Georgia. He's a former Scout Master, and he's a member at large for the Board of Directors of the Atlanta Area Council of Boy Scouts of America, in addition to being a doctor at the Physician Spine and Rehabilitation Specialist. Hi, welcome to the program. Dr.
Thanks, Reiser. Robert. Thanks for asking me to join.
If you were still a Scoutmaster and I were a parent and my young child had an interest in scouting and I had my doubts and I said, look, I've read bad things about what's happened to kids in the Boy Scouts. How do I know that my child is not going to be in some way abused? What do you say?
That's a great question, and what I would do and what I did do as a Scoutmaster is I would open the Boy Scout handbook, and directly inside the front cover of the Boy Scout handbook was a little pamphlet to tear out and go over with parents and their children together, and it talks about youth protection, and it is a very detailed book for discussion between parents and a child about safe practices and between scout leaders. And it outlines the guidelines and the requirements that scout leaders have for protecting youth and the procedures that they must follow.
Yeah.
And as a scout master, it was one of the most meaningful things that I would do with a parent and a new scout.
Now, I had a Boy Scouts handbook. I was only a Cub Scout, but I remember having it. It didn't have it in it in those days. So what about people who were scouts way back when? Are they do something? Do you accept the idea that the Boy Scouts of America is liable for what happened to kids?
You know, that's a wonderful question, and you know, obviously one case of abuse is one too many, and one loss is one loss too many, and one damaged child is one too many. There's a lot of ways to look at how to make those people whole. The money's certainly part of it. I don't know how much money solves it. I do know that since 1995, since I've been involved as a Scoutmaster, that the organization has placed that priority as number one, as witnessed by the fact that that's right under the front cover of the Scout Handbook. And it's only gotten stronger since the time I've been involved for the last 30 years. We now hold in Atlanta, our council holds youth protection seminars that are attended by youth-serving organizations and their leaders throughout our community. Participants have been our Atlanta City Police Chief, Erica Shield, as well as the director of our Georgia Bureau of Investigation.
I'm just curious, by the way, I put to you a hypothetical question. Just, do you hear that question in real life? Did people ask you that when you were a Scoutmaster?
And what was that question again about?
Is my kid, what are you going to do to protect my kid?
You know, I never had that question okay. asked to me directly, but it could be because I was proactive about it and really addressed that as one of the first first things when New Scout came into the troop.
Dr. Randy Reiser in Atlanta, thanks for talking with us. We are discussing troubled waters for the Boy Scouts. I'm Robert Siegel in for Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Robert Siegel, and we're talking about the Boy Scouts after they filed for bankruptcy this week in the wake of child sexual abuse allegations. Can they move forward? How should they? Jared in Ames, Iowa, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you, Robert. Yeah, I grew up as in the Boy Scouts and was lucky enough to have a really positive experience, and I recently last year volunteered as a den leader for my son's troop, and just wanted to share some perspective in that I was so surprised. Our policy was that we wanted each child to have at least one parent at every meeting or activity, and I was just astonished at how difficult it was to get parents there. I, as a parent myself, if I hadn't been a den leader, certainly would have been there. Regardless of who the leaders were, you just never know. And so that was just something that really shocked and surprised me, is that it seemed to be more of a function of a felt like a babysitter.
How old were the kids in question?
These were kindergartners.
Kindergartners?
Yeah.
And I'm surprised to hear that.
Yeah. I would be lucky some days to have two other parents there. And so, yeah, being hyper aware of the abuse and things that were going on, you know, I myself was wanting the parents because I didn't want that responsibility all on me. I wanted, you know, that extra accountability there. But so that is surprising. And it wasn't just in our group, every age level, it was a struggle to get parents to come.
Well, Jared, thanks for telling that story to us. We're going to turn now to Norman, Oklahoma, where Elizabeth is on the line. Hi, what's your story?
Hello. I have two sons. They're both Eagle Scouts. And I just wanted to point out the fact that I disagree with your earlier guest about her characterization of the Boy Scouts of America as a predatory type of organization that encourages that type of leader, because I have not found that to be the case at all. Our troop 241 out of Norman, Oklahoma is celebrating its 100th anniversary this year. Mm-hmm. I'm extremely proud of it. And every single parent, every single leader that my sons have had the privilege to interact with have been encouraging. They've taught them leadership and other things that every parent can't bring to the table. So I would just like to point out that my sons have both benefited greatly from being Boy Scouts and have gone all the way to Eagle Scout and continue to give back to their troop. And it's each troop is what the parents and the scouts and the leaders make of it.
Mm-hmm.
Our two deep, our policy of two deep with all scouts at all times is strictly enforced. And I just really want to encourage every parent that's considering having their child, whether they're a boy or a girl, join BSA Scouts. I really, really encourage it. It's an excellent organization. I don't like to see it besmirched in this way.
Elizabeth, thank you very much for talking with us. Kara Kelly, investigative reporter for USA Today, who's done a lot of the work in reporting on the Boy Scouts, is with us. And I wonder, we're hearing from different places all over the country support for the Boy Scouts. Has the national movement been down the line supportive of the Central Boy Scouts of America?
It sounds very much so. I do get a lot of letters and emails after my stories of positive experiences from parents and others who have a connection to Boy Scouts saying this was not their experience. They loved their time in the Boy Scouts. So I think there is still a good amount of support. That said, it definitely has been on the decline over the years. The loss of the Church of Latter-day Saints was a big blow to the organization. That went into effect in January, and I believe it was about an 18% drop in enrollment after the church pulled out and decided to create its own organization.
In a community where scouting was almost universal, I gather.
Correct, yes. It was a very, very big part of scouting.
And that was over permitting gay troop leaders? Was that the or scoutmasters?
I think the wording was more that there was a movement away from the original founding morals of the Boy Scouts. So it may be more complex than that, but that's the general idea.
Well, joining us now is another former Scoutmaster. This is Dr. Michelle Holmes, who's a member of the Northeast region of the Board of Scouts, of Boy Scouts of America. Dr. Holmes is a physician and medical researcher at Harvard University. Dr. Holmes, your thoughts about the bankruptcy filing by Boy Scouts of America.
Yes. Hello, Robert.
Hi.
Well, first of all, I, like any decent human being, is absolutely appalled at the problem of child abuse. And those survivors deserve all of our empathy, and they deserve some form of restitution. I think that has to be said first and foremost. And there is this complicated both-and. I have been involved on the local basis in Cambridge, in the Boston area, for the past 22 years. I am the charter organization representative for a Cub Scout pack, a girl troop, a boy troop, and a venture crew based in Cambridge. And I have seen transformative changes in the youth that we serve, primarily urban youth who do not have experiences in the outdoors if it wasn't for this. And I feel like there has to be some sort of balance such that these experiences can continue to be there for young people to grow in their leadership, in their citizenship, in their physical fitness, in their caring for the earth, at the same time as helping and giving back to these unfortunate survivors of child abuse. I will say that any child-serving organization, any youth-serving organization, is going to attract predators. It's a terrible problem. We have to work ceaselessly to prevent it as much as we can. And I do think the BSA does a good job, at least in the 20-plus years I've been involved, in preventing, in having policies to prevent as much abuse as possible.
Dr. Holmes, just one question. Since the outdoors is central to this experience, as you're describing it, and since Boy Scouts of America's biggest assets, I gather, are bits of the outdoors, that is, large pieces of land all around the country for camping, would it diminish the experience if BSA had to liquidate itself and sell off property, campgrounds, in order to satisfy the claims of plaintiffs?
I'm going to leave that to the BSA's legal team. As I said, there has to be some kind of balance. There has to be a way in which survivors can be made whole, and at the same time, the experience is continued for the young people of tomorrow.
Well, Dr. Michelle Holmes, thanks for talking with us today about it. And
we're now
going to turn to New Orleans, where Charlie is on the line. Charlie, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm an Eagle Scout. I was in Tiger Cubs. That's the earliest age you can join. And then 1 month before I turned 18, which is the deadline to get your Eagle Scout, I got everything approved. I went to a wonderful troop, Troop 45 in Oxford, Mississippi. And we had an instance where we had two college students who were joining to volunteer. They didn't know each other. They just started to volunteer around the same time. And we're a college town. We're Ole Miss, or University of Mississippi is. And one of the gentlemen is now one of the scoutmasters, Bill Taylor, excellent person, father, husband, great character of what a scoutmaster should be. The other gentleman was arrested in 2010 for predatory acts against children, and he was kicked out very, very quickly. Our scoutmasters, Mr. Tony Wilson and Mr. Steve Malden, we read that little pamphlet at the beginning of the scout book that was instituted, I think. I remember seeing it in the early 2000s, but we went through it thoroughly, and they had a very, very off feeling about the guy. And so he was quickly whisked away, and it wasn't really surprising when he was arrested. But luckily, no one in our troop was hurt. I just hope, yes, sir.
I'm just curious, when that happened and people looked back on this particular fellow you've referred to as the bad apple, was it evident from anything in his past behavior that he would be a bad apple? Was there something that had been overlooked when he was given the post?
I think because he was closer to the age of some of the older scouts, he kind of used that to maybe lure himself in. He was, because he was just a little bit older, and in college, the high school age scouts, we thought he was cool. And, you know, after we did get a bad vibe from him, he wanted to sleep in the tents of one of the, basically we had big tents that all the scouts would sleep in. He wanted to sleep in the tent with us, and our scoutmasters took that as a red flag as to get him out. But we did overlook it at first, definitely so.
Charlie, thanks. Still on the line with us is Alvin Townley in Atlanta, the Eagle Scout and author of a couple of books about scouts. And I believe now with a phone connection that doesn't drop out all the time. Is that right, Alvin?
I certainly hope so, Robert.
When you hear a story like that, you know, the guy who wanted to sleep in the tent with the... do red flags always go up all over scouting? Would the reaction that we just heard described be typical of what's been happening for years in the Boy Scouts?
I would hope so. I hope that, you know, the second a scout or a leader observes something that's a little off color, that they immediately take action. And I think certainly after this recent process, I feel everyone in scouting is going to be even more vigilant. And I feel like they already were very vigilant. And so, you know, I hope that, you know, like Scoutmaster Reiser said earlier, you know, that people are studying that scout handbook, not only for its values and for its skills, but also for that first section on, you know, how to protect young people.
Kara Kelly, I'm curious what happens next. There is a stack of documents that I gather you started going through them yesterday, or was that put on hold? When do we find out more about the magnitude of the problem for Boy Scouts of America?
Correct. We had a stack of documents that came in early hours of Tuesday morning. And actually, as we speak, I believe the first hearing is happening in Delaware, in the Delaware Bankruptcy Court. So we should know more after that hearing. But this could take a year or two. This could take several months, and things will be coming out over that time period. We do know that there will be a cutoff point that may be decided soon of when individuals who have claims of sexual abuse need to come forward by. You know, we will be publishing that as soon as we get it, but it's a very important date that people need to know, because there will be a distinct cutoff.
I alluded earlier to the fact that Boy Scouts of America is a pretty big property holder, landholder. What are their properties evaluated at, and what is the what are the assets of Boy Scouts of America?
That is something that we are all still very interested in. In the filings, they did say that they estimated their land and property holdings at $70 million. That, although it sounds like a huge number, is actually maybe lower than what the totality of Boy Scouts of America, including all of the local councils, actually owns. We have done some reporting that the actual assets of the local councils far outnumber the assets of the national council. In New York alone, from our research, we found $101 million in property, and that's in one state. So think about that across the entire country.
I think now, I've seen in USA Today's reporting a number in the billions. Do I have that wrong?
The total assets of Boy Scouts, they estimated at a little over $1 billion.
Okay.
Yes, correct.
And any idea based on what happened with lawsuits brought against Archdiocese, which I guess is the closest parallel, of what kind of awards are typically given in cases like these?
We really don't know. We do know from the Boy Scouts filing that they had already paid out, including settlements and legal costs, $150 million just between 2017 and 2019. And that's in civil court, so we probably won't see that same level of numbers. But it's really going to be a battle between the victims' attorneys and the Boy Scouts over how much money they're going to make available to the victims in what they're going to set up as a trust. They have very much postured themselves that they are going to be trying to protect their local councils and thus the assets of the local councils. And the victims' attorneys have made very clear that they do not buy that argument.
The victims' attorneys will say you're hiding assets by saying that campground belongs to the Minnesota Council of Boy Scouts. It's part of the whole system. And the Boy Scouts will say, no, it's used by troops in that area, and they've operated it, and they've maintained it, so it's theirs. Roughly, that's
correct.
The argument, yeah.
That is essentially the argument. And what the victims' attorneys will say, and the victims themselves, too, is that, well, it's actually these local councils that are carrying out these policies, and in some cases not carrying out these policies, you know, failing to do background checks, failing to be vigilant, failing to report predators in the necessary way. So they should be held liable as well.
Kara Kelly of USA Today, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Alvin Townley, Eagle Scout, if you're still there, thanks for talking with us today.
You're welcome, Robert.
And you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. On Point is produced by Anna Bauman, Justine Daum, Eileen Amada, Brittany Knotts, Stefano Katsonis, Wes Martin, Hillary McQuilkin, James Ross, Dori Scheimer, Grace Tatter, and Adam Waller, with help from Liam Knox, Caroline Love, and Bradley Noble. I'm Robert Siegel in this week for Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point.